Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 227 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me today is Spencer Lafferman.
Thanks for having me.
A little bit different today. Not just your normal, hey, how you doing? Yes, thank you for being here. We're talking about one of our favorite movies, especially because Elijah Wood is in it, and I love him in horror movies. I wish he did more, but he's only been in like three. Cooties, Maniac, Come to Daddy, and then maybe is Open Windows, is that a horror movie?
I would consider that more a psychological thriller.
Yeah,
but it kind of
borders on horror.
I mean Saw was also technically a psychological thriller.
Yeah,
but I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't a horror, but like it was in that subgenre. I believe he's also, I'd have to look this up, but there's a movie called Grand Piano, I feel like I classified as horror. I haven't seen it, but I know he's in it, and I feel like it's in that genre.
Grand Piano?
Yes.
I've never even heard of
also,
said movie.
Also, I think it was a movie called The Oxford Murders, which I don't know if that's considered thriller or horror also.
Grand Piano, drama, music, mystery, thriller, so probably it's adjacent.
And then look at Oxford Murders for me while you're on there.
The Oxford. You can probably hear that in the microphone. We have a fucking air show going on over my house right now. Crime, horror, mystery, thriller.
Yeah,
okay,
there you go.
So he's been in a handful of movies, but he does...
Also, he's going to be in The Toxic Avenger. The new one.
Oh, that's right. And he looks crazy in that, too. Yes. I forgot. So, yeah, I always love when Elijah Wood's in a horror movie because, honestly, he has range I didn't even know that he fucking had until I saw this movie a couple years back. And I was like, whoa, this is a different Elijah Wood.
I definitely noticed it first in Sin City where he plays...
Okay, that's true. He plays like a cannibal.
Another cannibal. What was I going to say? I meant serial killer, and in my brain went cannibal, and I was still like, I think that's why I paused real quick, because I'm like, did I mean that? And then I kept going with it, because I think I meant that, but I didn't.
I think you might be having a stroke tonight.
I might be having a stroke. You know me, no sleep.
No sleep, gang, yeah, so yeah. He's a serial killer.
Serial killer, though, yeah. But you only get a little bit of his glimpse of it, and I want to say like maybe 10 minutes of screen time of his serial killerness in Sin City.
Serial killerness,
but still, like, he doesn't really speak in there. It's just his menacing look in Sin City, and yeah, because he basically went from Lord of the Rings to that,
right?
And I was like,
whoa there, buddy.
What a 180, bro.
Yeah, that's a full 180 there from a fantasy adventure movie to a comic book kind of serial killer. So yeah, Elijah Wood definitely has range that I didn't even understand until I saw him in a movie like Maniac or like, you know, Come to Daddy. And yeah, he's great. So I really enjoy this one, and he's pretty much like, obviously he's the main person in this. And this is the remake of the 1980 Maniac. And honestly, I like this one better.
Yeah,
no shade to the original. The original is still a great movie. I think it's very solid. And I don't think anything will ever beat Tom Savini's head fucking exploding into a million pieces.
It's a good one.
That is such a great shot when he jumps on top of the car with a shotgun and just... So, good movie. Really enjoy that one. But this one, I think where this one succeeds is how it's shot. Because it is shot so fucking masterfully. And it kind of... goes from his POV to just kind of like swirling around. It's so well shot. Like the cinematography is like the chef's kiss for this movie. And also the crazy amount of gore. And it's for the most part very practical. Especially that scene at the end when he's just like getting ripped apart.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy. So before that, let's do some horror news here. I've got some good stuff. There is a new movie coming out next year, I believe, and it's called Lisa Frankenstein. There go some planes. And there's a trailer that just came out. While new iterations of Bram Stoker's Dracula seem to come around every 15 minutes or so, fresh takes on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein seem to be fewer and farther between. Sure, we've seen a number of Frankenstein adaptations over the year, especially with Guillermo del Toro. He's working on a new one, and Mia Goth is going to be the bride. Oscar Isaac is going to be the monster, and fucking Andrew Garfield is going to be Dr. Frankenstein. Fucking let's go.
That's a pretty good, like, that's pretty solid. Like, I'm already picturing, picturing, like, they're all pretty, like, they all have the range to do exactly that part.
I just, I don't know about Oscar Isaac as the monster, though, because he's not a big dude. So that's my only thing, because Frankenstein is a big, burly son of a bitch. So unless I'm mistaken, that...
I mean, he's pretty... He's not like big in terms of like tall, but like he's
yeah, he's pretty. He's got a great build.
Yeah, he's
got
a build. I mean, but also like he's got time to bulk up if he really needed to.
Let's see, because I'm actually curious because I don't know how.
I feel like he's like 6'1", 6'2". I could be wrong in that.
He is. He's 5'8" and a half. So yeah, he's pretty small.
All right, Tom Cruise. Not maybe, really. Tom Cruise is shorter.
Maybe he'll wear some, because I know Frankenstein usually has some big, chunky shoes.
Yeah, so I mean, that happens all the time in movies. I mean,
yeah,
Robert Downey Jr. wore insoles in Sherlock Holmes because Rachel McAdams was taller than him in real life. So he had to appear taller because, you know.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. But something about Shelley's original text seems to inspire much less riffing than Stoker's iconic vampire novel. This is going to be written by Diablo Cody, who you might know from writing Jennifer's Body,
yeah,
which is fucking awesome. And it's going to star Freaky's Catherine Newton and Riverdale MVP Cole Sprouse. So very interesting to see Cole Sprouse in a horror movie. But Lisa Frankenstein is a retelling of Shelley's classic novel, more or less, as told through a decidedly 80s lens. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, and you know, I'm genuinely intrigued to find out what happens. Here is the official plot synopsis. A coming rage, all capital, love story about a misunderstood teenager and her high school crush who happens to be a handsome corpse. After a set of playfully horrific circumstances bringing him back to life, the two embark on a murderous journey to find love, happiness, and a few missing body parts along the way.
So
it sounds so cool.
It honestly sounds like Bonnie and Clyde horror.
Yeah, like Bonnie and Clyde meet Frankenstein.
Yeah, like horror wise. And I mean, Cole Sprouse, you know, from that synopsis, it just looks like they're like, ooh, let's pick someone. Like, you know, it's a horror film, but like, you know, him being in Riverdale is pretty much like a high school love story TV show. So like, and he, you know, he's not an unattractive person. So like it fits the bill for him. I don't know if he... I feel like he's going to have the acting range for it, but if he's the one playing Frankenstein, there's not necessarily a lot of acting needed in there.
Yeah, it's more just like, ugh.
And we know Catherine Newton can
oh, can fucking act. I mean,
obviously in Freaky, but she was also in Ant-Man Quantumania.
Yeah.
And a couple other things we've seen her in, so...
Yeah, Catherine Newton's fucking great, so I know. I'm definitely confident in her ability to do this. But yeah, Cole Sprouse, I was like, interesting. I also have never seen Riverdale, so I didn't know he was in that. But yeah, he plays Jughead Jones in that. And he was on for 6 years, I think.
The whole season.
Oh, the whole 137 episodes. So
I want to say the first like couple of seasons. I never finished it, so the show.
Yeah.
So I can't really speak on the entire show, but I stopped for a reason. It was good until it wasn't, and I was like, it's just getting way too CW-y.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
on the CW, but like I enjoyed it. I know it's based on like Archie comics and stuff. The first couple of seasons I watched, I really did enjoy it, but then it just got too CW for me. I was like, I'm out.
Kind of done.
I mean, but what's his face was in there? Skeet Ulrich is in there. Actually plays Cole Sprouse's dad in there.
Oh,
and
okay.
He of course, you know, kills his scenes. He does really well in there.
Nice. Okay, yeah, there he is. Skeet Ulrich. F.P. Yeah. Jones. Nice. So in addition to Newton and Sprouse, Lisa Frankenstein cast also includes Carla fucking Cugino, most recently seen in Mike Flanagan's Fall of the House of Usher, a woman called Liza Soberano from Alone/Together, Joe Kress from Stranger Things, and Henry Eikenberry from The Crowded Room. This is going to arrive just in time for Valentine's Day on February 9th, 2024. So get your girlfriend, get your wife, husband, whoever. Take them out for a nice date. Go get some food and watch a Frankenstein love story. Gabby's like, she looks at me, she's like, if you're smart, you'll take me to see this. I'm like, well, duh, like, come on, absolutely.
I'm not smart, but I want to see it too, so it's gonna work.
Yeah, like, yeah, well, okay, yeah.
I might be smart, but it's something I want to see too.
Yeah,
so
I might not
work.
Be all fully here, but yes, I will absolutely do that because we usually go out to a movie to see something, and it works for both of us because she gets to go out on Valentine's Day, and then I get to see a horror movie.
So I guess
win-win.
The question is, are you going to see it when it comes out, or are you going to wait till Valentine's Day?
No, we always take Valentine's Day off, and then I just take her around town. I fucking hate Valentine's Day. It's the worst.
Me too.
It's the worst, but she loves it, so I just do it for her because I know she appreciates it, and you know, I just want to make her happy. But yeah, I fucking hate Valentine's Day. And she knows it too, and she appreciates the fact that I do stuff for her because she knows how much I hate it. Fucking Hallmark commercial holiday. It's bullshit. Anyways, let me tell you how I really feel. So there's a Blackula reboot set for Halloween next year. Apparently this was announced more than 2 years ago, but we finally have some information on the forthcoming Blackula reboot. Director Dion Taylor's film is now set to arrive in time for Halloween next year. No specific release date has been set, but Variety brings word that Taylor's reimagining of the blaxploitation classic is coming our way during spooky season. So plan accordingly, motherfuckers. Dion Taylor, I guess he directed Meet the Blacks in Fear. That's what I'm assuming, because it said director Dion Taylor. So I'm assuming he either directed those or wrote those. And Roxanne Event Taylor, who produces the upcoming reboot, will be presenting a special Halloween screening of the original Blackula on October 24th at the Fine Arts Theater in Beverly Hills, California, in partnership with the African American Film Critics Association. So that is super fucking cool. Variety brought word of the release window for the reboot in reporting of the screening, which is meant to celebrate the film's 50th year legacy. Yeah, I can't believe that movie is from 73. So that's pretty cool. Very little has been revealed by way of specifics in regard to the new film, though this new report reveals that it will be set in a metropolitan city post-coronavirus pandemic. So vampires dealing with, oh shit, now we can't just go out and eat anybody. People might have the Rona. So that'll be interesting. That'll bring some of the real world into this film. Dion Taylor co-wrote the screenplay with Micah Ranum. There's no word yet on who will be starring in the title role, for example, but they will be following in the footsteps of William Marshall, who played the part in both the original and its sequel. We actually reviewed Blackula in February for Black History Month, so if you want to check that episode out, go back, you know, a few months. What we do have, however, are the story details for the upcoming film. The synopsis reads as follows. Blackula is an ancient African prince who is cursed by Dracula after he fails to agree to end the slave trade. Blackula is entombed and awakened 200 years later, ready to avenge the death of his ancestors and those responsible for robbing his people of their work, culture, and heritage as they appropriated it for profit. So I enjoy the original Blackula, so it'll be cool to see someone do like a reimagining of
this.
I
hope they get Michael J. White to play Blackula. That'd
be cool. Who's Michael J. White? I probably know him from something, but I don't know the name.
What would you know him from?
that's
Black Dynamite? Have you seen Black
Michael
Dynamite?
J-A-I. Oh, J-A-I. J. White, okay. Oh, yes.
He's done blaxploitation movies, plenty of them before. Like, Black Dynamite is one of his biggest ones, and it's absolutely a fantastic movie.
Oh, he's also in Spawn. He's also in The Dark Knight. Okay.
He would, I think, fit the bill really well.
He would fit because that's what he does.
That's what he does, blaxploitation very well. Like I said, Black Dynamite is probably one of the most notorious ones that he did.
Okay, Black Dynamite.
It's hilarious. It's like 84
action
minutes
comedy,
of,
yeah.
84 minutes of pure like old. Like,
ooh, 7.4 out of 10.
Oh,
on
it's
IMDb.
Amazing.
Whoa, okay.
Amazing.
Let me add this to my ever growing list of shit that I never watch, but it'll be on there.
I have to 100% look, but I either give it a 4.5 or a 5.
Oh, it's got a 4.0. Let's fucking go. Yeah, 85 minutes too. You're in.
Dude,
you're
the movie's
out, baby.
Amazing.
All right.
The movie's just hilarious.
All right. This is a story of a 1970s African American action legend. I like it. Okay.
And Michael J. White knows actual karate and he's got black belts. He's essentially the black Jason Statham.
Okay.
is how I would describe, because he's not young, but he's super like ripped and he looks healthy.
He's got a healthy look to him.
I mean, him and his wife have been on like fitness magazines and stuff for years, and they're both not young.
Okay.
So yeah, he's into all that stuff, and he does it really well.
Okay.
I'd say he's a B-rated actor, but like
A-plus performance.
Yes. But he picks those movies like on purpose. Like he's not, you know, just like, you know, like I said, Jason Statham. He's not a, you know, A-lister, but he is, I guess, when it comes to like money in a way, but
money and how much shit he's in for sure.
But if you look at Michael J. White's filmography, there's a lot of straight to video, but like he's in a lot of things you just were like, oh, didn't know he was in all that.
He's got 120 credits for for IMDb. So that is, yeah, that's not, yeah, that's pretty damn good. Oh, he was in Black Friday too with, okay. Yes. That's where I know him from too. Black Friday with Bruce Campbell.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Very nice. Cool.
Yeah. He just pops up.
I think I could agree with that. I could champion for him to.
He was just, while you're reading the synopsis and description, he was just the first person I thought about.
Yeah, I like that. All right, well, I'll keep you everybody updated on that as it comes along. So another thing from Fangoria I have here is Chucky versus Megan? Question mark. Stay tuned, says Chucky creator Don Mancini. I am about this. I think this would be fucking hilarious if they did a crossover. So the first half of Chucky's latest season has come to a close. There's four more episodes remaining of this season. Not going to spoil anything like I did last time. I bleeped it out, though.
That's good.
While speaking with Variety about Chucky's latest series of hijinks, series creator Don Mancini offered up a few thoughts on where Chucky might go from here. Says Mancini, quote, Chucky really has to contend with legitimate new contenders to the throne like Megan and Annabelle. I mean, but Annabelle doesn't move, so, you know. He has to deal with that place for himself in the pop culture world, and that's how we really touch the ground with Chucky. We give this off-the-wall character a crisis that has the sting of real pain in real life, but it just makes him angrier, and you know what happens when Chucky gets angry. So, you know, will anything come of this? Who knows? The history of the horror genre is littered with the bodies of great ideas that never come to fruition, and this may well prove to be yet another one of those. But on the very outside chance that Chucky v. Megan is something we could will into existence, we'll be keeping our fingers crossed. I think that'd be fucking hilarious.
I mean, it would be a good, depending if, you know, when the Megan 2 comes out, which it's slated for next year, but who knows what's going to come out next year, if anything. Really.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to be a rough year.
But it would be a great, if they end up doing Chucky like first, it would be a great advertisement campaign.
Right.
Like, even if it's like, even if it's incorporated in like one episode of the series, like it would be a cool, because then whatever, like for instance, like say whatever, like say Chucky wins just, or in the TV show, whatever happens to Megan there leads into the plot of Megan 2, even though I know Megan 2.0 is already written and everything. But like, the great thing about, honestly, one of the plus sides of movies being delayed for as long as they are, you have time to fix shit or change shit if you want to. And I know Megan 2 is not filming yet because I mean, it probably would be if the strike wasn't going on.
Right.
But because of right now, it's just on paper. You can add stuff if you really wanted to, if they really wanted to do this. So I think it would be a cool advertising campaign. Not that Megan's sequel needs much campaigning, because right, the first one killed it.
And it was so good.
And made so much money. And I know the second one's going to make that plus more probably because of the following. But like, it would be a great little, like, just like they did to advertise season 2 of Chucky, they made fun of the Nicole Kidman AMC ad.
So good. Yeah. Oh my
god. So to do that, maybe it'd be a cool little, like, Chucky versus Megan would be like a tie-in into Megan 2.0. I mean, obviously Chucky won't be in that one, or maybe he will. Who knows?
That'd be great. I could just see it now, just like Chucky sees like a news article about a Megan doll that's gone rogue, and he's like, "Who the fuck is this bitch?"
Yeah, just if anything, just that quick little like 10-second segment in the TV show. Yeah,
that'd be fucking great.
Just Chucky being his sarcastic, vulgar self, but then you're like, "Oh shit." You know, blah blah blah. Just like how in La Llorona, you see the animal doll for like 10 seconds, and it's just how they're quote unquote connected to the universe.
Yeah.
So just something like that. That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be fucking awesome. Yeah.
I mean, they're both owned by Universal, so it's not like it'd be hard to get the rights.
They have the rights, yeah.
They have it. It's theirs.
I love it. And some really excellent news here. Mike Dougherty says that Trick or Treat 2 is in active development. The original Trick or Treat arrived all the way back in 2007, but didn't even get theatrically released, I think, until 2009.
Yeah, it was shelved for 2 years.
Yeah, so, you know, at that point it became an instant hit. It's like an annual watch for Halloween enthusiasts and horror anthology fans. It's a twisty, darkly comedic, occasionally gory series of stories woven together into one delicious package. Trick or Treat has amassed quite the cult following in the years since its release, and we're all wondering the same thing. Where the fuck is the Trick or Treat sequel? During a recent Q&A following the screening of Trick or Treat, Doherty, who announced the sequel as being in development roughly a decade ago, offered the following update. Quote, I will say this because we said it last year at the Beyond Fest screening. The sequel is in active development with Legendary Films. I'll go so far to say that we have several drafts of a script. I brought back the same storyboard artist I mentioned before, Simeon Wilkins. So we have a stack of storyboards and a good fat stack of concept art done by Breen Burns as well. So it's inching along. That is amazing. I've been wanting a fucking sequel since I saw the first one. I mean, it's, you know, it's an anthology. So it's not hard to just, I mean, I'm not saying it's hard. It's hard to make a movie, but it wouldn't be hard to come up with a few new stories to intertwine together. Because they don't even have to fucking, they don't even have to do anything with like, or be involved with anything in the first one. I mean, it'd be cool if they find a way to kind of connect it, but like,
I'm pretty sure that's what they're probably going to do. Cause that just seems like the way he did that and how long it's taking. I mean, to be honest, like, I feel like it's taking this long. I mean, for a lot of reasons, obviously, but like, he probably would want to try to connect it in a way to make, like, if he does, like, say he does a trilogy, like the trilogy being just one, I wouldn't say cohesive movie, but one cohesive anthology, like in the same, like the same night.
Yeah.
But like different things are happening, but like in the background, you can clearly see there will be some type of connection. Cause obviously, you know, Sam is going to be part of it.
Because, yeah, of course.
And the whole, and Sam is kind of what brought the first one full circle.
Yeah, exactly.
So, to me, if I were the same writer for this, I would want to bring the sequel to be in this literally the same night, if not like the same night, just happening in a different area.
Yeah, I was gonna say like same night, but just different stories.
Like maybe we see some of the actors, you know, that were just walking around, and then we go to a different segment. Maybe we see another area that they walked around in.
Yeah.
And we see things happening around them. So it's a quick little like, oh, hey, you were in the first one.
Yeah. That's
connected.
Just, like, it's just not a nod. Yeah.
It's not necessarily hard to connect them, but like if you connect them, then you got to make sure you find the time to get the right actor or actress to come back.
That's true. Yeah.
To even if it's like a 10 second scene, like that 10 second scene could probably take an entire day to film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be really cool if he connected that, or, you know, he did a second one, and then the third one connects the dots to all of them. Like,
oh,
the second
man,
one is just
great.
Its own, and the third one is the rubber band that just brings them all together.
Yeah, I mean, I love Doherty. You know, he does great work. He also said, quote, I'm hoping to talk to Legendary. They've been wonderful, like great collaborators, but so much of it is timing, and as you know, we just got out of a strike. So the next step, fingers crossed, we'll be looking at budget, of course, schedule, and then all the rest. But we really have a great script for a sequel, and I brought in my co-writer from Krampus to do it with me. So Zach Shields and Todd Casey, who did Krampus with me, also helped me write Trick or Treat Part 2. So let's fucking go. Super excited. I've been waiting on this for ages. Ages. I don't know what that accent was, but yes, so we'll see, because who's still on strike? The writers aren't, but the actors are.
The actors are,
right?
So obviously, okay. Without actors, you can't.
ain't gonna have shit going on. So.
Well, I mean, if the production companies get their way, the actors won't be a thing anymore.
Oh, that's good.
Which is why, well, that's the whole reason what the strike is. So I'm sure you know, but just, and I know, just a brief thing, because I try to keep up to date, but I don't always. So, like, the whole thing is. The production companies want to pay these actors for like their likeness.
Oh.
So say we'll just throw a random actor out there. Let's just say Matt Damon.
Okay.
Matt Damon. Anyway. So say Matt Damon's in another movie. So he does this movie as himself, like as an actor, like a person. And then let's just say Universal Studios has the rights to this movie. What they want to do is take his likeness after this and just use it as AI for the rest of, quote unquote, Matt Damon's career. But they only want to pay him for that movie. Now I could be wrong with some of the information, like, or I could have read differently, like things could have been differently. But essentially, production companies just want to use the actor's likeness and, as AI, and a lot, and that's why they're striking, because they're taking their jobs.
Oh my god.
So
this fucking AI shit is ruining everything. Did we not see Terminator?
Oh, well, it's funny too, because there's been two movies this year alone to where AI is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of funny. And one of them was Mission Impossible.
Yeah, have we not learned anything from the movies?
I think it's funny how, like, I just think it's funny how they're like, you know, like, in an age of AI, like, we don't want to be replaced with AI, but, like, we're very aware that it could be a thing, so let's do a movie completely centered around AI taking over.
It's ridiculous.
It's
ridiculous.
I mean, Terminator is a very, very well...
Come with me if you want to live.
If anybody's not seen Terminator, you should watch it to see where our world might be ending up.
Seriously.
Because it could be close.
Skynet's going to take over everything.
I don't necessarily say the machines are going to take over, but AI essentially is the machine. So
yeah, exactly. All right, last and certainly not least here, there's a new movie from Mr. Mike Flanagan called The Life of Chuck.
Yeah, that is like everybody in it.
And holy fucking balls, let me tell you, everyone that's in this goddamn movie. So as we currently are speaking right now, Mike Flanagan is somewhere in Alabama, hard at work on his latest Stephen King adaptation. Fucking just let him redo every Stephen King thing ever. It's called The Life of Chuck, based on King's 2020 novella of the same name. This particular tale will make for a far less bloody affair than either of Flanagan's previous King adaptations, but rest assured, it's still got a bit of that old Stephen King spookiness in its DNA. Mark Hamill as cast members, and earlier this week we learned that Chitwetel.
I can never pronounce his name.
Chitwetel Ejiofor, Karen Gillan, and Jacob Tremblay were also joining the cast. Today, however, Flanagan himself has taken to Twitter to announce the rest of the Life of Chuck cast, and it's positively overflowing with some of our faves. Buckle the fuck in, okay? The Life of Chuck will also feature performances from Fangoria fave David Desmalchian, the Boogeyman, Heather Langenkamp, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Matthew Lillard from Scream, Mia Sara, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and Harvey Guillen, I think, from What We Do in the Shadows, as well as Flanagan collaborators Carly Lumbly from Dr. Sleep, Kate Siegel, Fall of the House of Usher, Annalise Basso, Oculus, Samantha Sloyan from Midnight Mass, Rahul Kohli from Usher, Matt Bedell from The Midnight Club, Sarunya Sapkota from Usher, Saida Arika Ekulona from The Haunting of Hill House, Michael Trucco from Usher, Violet McGraw, Hill House, and Molly C. Quinn from Usher. Oh my God. Joining them are Benjamin Pajak, Trinity Joe Bliss, Antonio Raul Corbo, and Taylor Gordon in her screen debut. Jesus fucking Christ. That is ridiculously stacked. I mean, not only do we get the fan faves of Flanagan's little Flaniverse, but Heather Langenkamp, Harvey Guillen, Matthew Lillard, Mark Hamill. What the fuck? Mark Hamill was phenomenal in The Fall of the House of Usher.
Yes, he was.
Holy shit. He was such a badass. Do you watch that whole thing?
Twice.
Oh, shit, really?
I'm a huge Edgar Allan Poe fan, so I was...
Wasn't it fucking brilliant how he
I binged it in... I just binge-watched it the first day, and then I gave it a couple days to just sink in my brain.
Yeah, and then watched it again. I thought it was brilliant how he literally took eight Poe stories and weaved them into...
One story.
Weaved them into another one of Poe's stories, because House of Usher is a Poe story, too.
Every episode was a different.
Yeah.
I
was like, geez, how Mike Flanagan, fuck you. Like, how do you do this?
Like, the last, like, 5 minutes of episode two had me.
Oh, yeah.
In a word, it had me hard.
Hard, yeah.
So hard.
I was chubbing out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal, like, I think it might be.
To me, it was his most ambitious work.
Oh, it definitely, yeah. But I'm still debating on if I think it's at the level of Hill House, and I gave Hill House a 5 out of 5. So
I gave them both fives.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna. Yeah, it's so good. So if you haven't seen Fall of the House of Usher, please, and obviously we'll keep you updated on Life of Chuck because I can't even wrap my head around how many fucking like just so many people are in this. I can't even speak. Oh my God, I can't wait. So let's move on here. IMDb roundup. Unless you have anything else you'd like to add, if there's anything you've seen lately that was worth anything mentioning, any good horror movies or anything, any good rewatches?
Hold, please.
All right. Do 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 do.
Oh, I watched The Others yesterday for the first time, finally.
Nicole Kidman?
Yeah.
It's pretty solid,
right? It came out in 2001, and I don't know why I just never saw that fucking movie until yesterday.
I didn't see it until a couple like years ago, so you're not alone.
I fucking loved it.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
I knew I was going to. I never got around to like buying it or watching it, and it's
right before the twist happened, I was like, this is what it's going to be, isn't it? And then it happened, and I was like, yeah, nice. It was like, nice.
Well, so, I mean, I guess it's 2001, you can spoil a little bit, but I'm not going to.
Okay.
But, like, the last 15 minutes, I partially knew what was going on, and then, like, the last 5 minutes, my brain just went away. Like, I was like, oh, I didn't see that part coming, but I saw the part before that part coming.
Me too, yeah.
I guess, like, the first part I saw coming, but
the
part...
the first little twist I saw.
Yeah, but I did not see the other, and I was like...
whoa! Yeah.
And, like, I love, like... honestly, I've always loved Nicole Kidman's movies. I really do. But you know, I've never seen her in a horror.
Yeah, it was a good one.
So it was really cool to see. Like, I mean, I know she's obviously got range, so I have no issue with that. But like, she did a powerhouse performance with, like, everything was believable.
Yeah, she's good. I love her in everything except that stupid fucking commercial.
I don't hate that commercial. It's just that it
takes up more time in the theater, and it's like,
it's
guys,
just overdone because usually, like, after a couple of months we get something new, but we haven't gotten something new.
It's like, guys, come on. All right, let's go to the IMDb roundup here. Maniac, yes, we have both seen this prior to this viewing for the podcast episode. Maniac from 2012, not released until June 21st of 2013 in the U.S. This movie is unrated. We have moderate sex and nudity, severe violence and gore, moderate profanity, moderate alcohol, drugs, and smoking, and severe frightening and intense scenes. Coming in at an hour and 29 minutes, perfect time for a movie. Listed as a horror thriller, directed by a man named Frank Calhoun, if I'm saying that correct, who also directed P2. Fucking great movie. Love that one. I think we're going to be doing that one next year around Christmas time, me and you, because I know that's like one of our favorites.
Did we not do that before?
We've done it before, but we haven't done a single episode on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we did like
just a couple minutes talking about it. Okay.
Yeah. Written by Alexander Aja, which I didn't even fucking realize until I put it on again this time. He also wrote High Tension, Hills Have Eyes, P2 and Mirrors. And I recently saw High Tension. It was fucked up. God damn. And I still don't understand the ending. I need to watch it again, but damn, that movie was fucked up. Who hurt Alexander Aja? Like, who hurt you? All his movies are so
probably
brutal.
The same person that hurt Ari Aster.
Yeah.
They got hurt by the same person.
They got hurt by the same person, yeah, but High Tension was fucking phenomenal. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, it's one of my faves.
Yeah, and I need to buy the second site, I think, is doing a 4K release of it, and I'm like, yeah, I gotta buy that, because I gotta see it in its native French. Fucking dubbed shit.
Well, I mean,
hate dubbed shit.
I mean, the normal Lionsgate Blu-ray has it regular. Like,
true, okay.
So we'll make, so this is what I found out. I don't know if I told you when we were talking about it beforhand, but so... the unrated version is its normal French. The original version, it's the normal French. The dubbed is the rated R version. So before you buy the 4K with Second Sight, because I looked on Second Sight as well, because I would love to own this in 4K. It didn't give me the rating of like if it was rated R or the unrated. I'm assuming it's going to be the unrated, but until I literally see it say unrated, I'm not going to assume.
Yeah, that's fair.
So before you buy it, I guess look.
Double check, yeah.
But the Lionsgate release that I have, that's like $10 on Amazon right now, has both versions. So
okay,
like, you're,
maybe
you're
I'll just do that
100%
for
set on that one.
Yeah, I tried to watch another movie last night,
Kidnapped.
And
why would Shudder give us the dub version?
Oh my god, it was such a bad dub. The
dub was probably some of the worst I've seen.
And like, it was some of the scenes, their voices were so low, but the music behind it was so loud, I was like, I can't do this. I was like, I'm done.
Well, and that's the crappy thing with dubbed, because they dub over it. So like, as it's basically just the voiceover. So I would love if that ever gets, because sometimes I've noticed on Shudder, sometimes Hulu or Amazon Prime will get those movies later on.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if we'll get the original Spanish version.
That's what I would like. Yeah.
Because also the emotion that some scenes of that movie required was not there with the dub. Like, I felt...
Yeah.
I mean, as shitty as it is, but you'll understand since you've seen it, but I'm not going to spoil anything because it's new, but you'll understand. I felt no emotional connection to anybody in that movie because I could not get over how stale the dub was.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I felt bad for nobody, and yeah, I should have felt bad for at least one person in that movie. But I'm like... I don't feel the emotion because you're not giving me the emotion
no,
to feel.
No, it was so bad, so I can't do it.
It's like if Stephen Wright, the dry comedic actor, did the dub for everybody, which he's funny, but like that's his shtick. He doesn't have any emotion to it.
Yeah, it's just
that's his
shtick.
But like the movie was great, but I would love to see it in its native language to give me more of an impact.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So I'll have to get that high tension Blu-ray for $10. This was also written by Gregory Levasseur, if I'm saying that correctly, who also wrote High Tension, Hills Have Eyes, P2, and Mirrors. Produced by 11 people, including Alexander Aja. Composed by Robin Corday, who also composed Horns, Revenge, Gretel and Hansel, and Oxygen, which is another Alexander Aja.
Oxygen was awesome.
Yeah, I still need to watch that
Terrifying.
I need to watch
awesome.
That. Cinematography by Maxime Alexandre, who also did the cinematography for, you guessed it, High Tension, The Hills Have Eyes, P2, Mirrors, The Crazies, Annabelle Creation, The Nun, Crawl, and Oxygen.
So
he's working
outside of other movies, basically anything Alexander Aja has done.
Pretty much, yeah. It was edited by two people, Baxter, that's the only name that they had, it was just straight Baxter, also edited, you guessed it, High Tension, The Hills Have Eyes, Inside, Mirrors, and Piranha 3D, and then it was also edited by the director, Frank Calhoun. He only edited three things, and this was the biggest one. Starring Elijah Wood as Frank, who you might know from Frodo,
From Frodo in Lord of the Rings.
From Frodo as the Lord of the Rings. Then we have Nora Anizader as Anna, who was also in Safe House as Anna Moray. America Olivia as Frank's mother, who was also in Friday the 13th sequel, the remake, as Amanda. And then we have Megan Duffy as Lucy, who was also in the New Year's segment from Holidays as Mandy. Estimated budget of $6 million, only grossing $2.6 million, so not great.
That was VOD, so, you know.
Yeah,
VOD, that's not bad.
It played in a few fests, and then it went to New York. The date I have is from the New York, like,
film
showing
festival
or something.
Okay.
Yeah. It was filmed in LA, California, and it shows. You can watch this on AMC Plus, IFC Films Unlimited, Pluto, and Tubi. So there's many ways to watch this, or you can just come over to my house and watch the Blu-ray because I have it. This is something I would love Scream Factory to put out in 4K. Like that, I would love a 4K of this movie. So that's just make it happen, Shout Factory.
Did they do IFC movies? I don't think so.
Scream Factory?
Yeah.
Oh, they do. Dude.
They do.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, look behind you. They do. I have so many IFC movies right there with slipcovers.
It's dark.
True. No, yeah, they do. They do a lot of IFC. And I thought this was an IFC Midnight, but it was just IFC
it's
Unlimited.
Just regular
and I was
IFC.
Like, that's fine. That's fine. Movies that came out around the same time, we've got The Hangover 3, Epic, American Mary, fucking solid movie. Now You See Me, The Internship, The Purge, This Is the End, Hatchet 3, World War Z. That rhymed. Monsters University, Despicable Me 2, The Heat, Pacific Rim, Grown Ups 2, The Conjuring, and The World's End.
You know, for this type of movie, a lot of wholesome movies came out there on this.
I know, right? You have a lot of wholesome movies, and then this.
Also, I didn't realize American Mary. I thought American Mary was older than that.
No, 2013.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, not much older. I thought it was like 2011. So
yeah, I honestly thought it was like 2009 or something like that. Specific horror moments, did you have one, and what was it?
The entire fucking movie?
The whole thing.
Anytime he scalped somebody?
Okay, that's fair.
Jesus.
Yeah, my horror moment was the first kill because he's like stalking that girl and he goes up behind her right in front of her apartment. He's like, please don't scream, you're so pretty. And then just jams a knife through the bottom of her mouth into her mouth.
I mean,
And then scalps her, and I was like, Jesus,
But then again, the ending was pretty horrific, so if I really had to choose one, it'd probably be the ending.
Yeah, I agree with that, but the only reason I say the beginning of the movie is because that just immediately set the tone for me when I first watched it.
Absolutely.
I was like, so this is the level we're going with. Okay.
And it was.
Yeah, and it was.
It 100% did it not let go.
Yeah, it does not let go, ever, and he scalps like four or five women. If not more. Did you have a favorite kill
of
the movie?
That would have probably been it.
What?
The first one.
Yeah, okay.
Just because, like you said, he killed a lot of people, but most of them were just regular, like, he killed them and then scalped them. This one, he brutalized her first.
The knife
all the way through the mouth like that. I've only seen that, like, twice in other movies, and they weren't horror. But still, like, I've only seen, like, that kind of, like, knife from the throat up. Like, yeah. Like, was like, what the fuck?
I've seen...
It's effective as shit.
I've seen knife through cheek. I've seen knife, like, through, like, in Scream when they were poking the knife through the neck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, going up through the bottom.
The only other movie I've seen that in was The Punisher, the Thomas Jane one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he killed... But it wasn't as brutal. I mean, it was as brutal, but it wasn't as,
like,
visual.
Yeah, visual, yeah.
It was just more, hey, I'm doing this for brutality. I mean, The Punisher's brutal, so, like, he had to. But, like, yeah, stuff like that. And the fact that you just, like, after he stabs her, like, the screen is just... It's not frozen, obviously, but the screen is, like, frozen on the detail for a good 5 seconds before anything else happens. So you're just watching, like, the blood curdle out of her mouth, and you see all the detail of the blade in her mouth. I'm just like, fuck.
Okay, this is how we're starting. You got it. You said your favorite kill was the first one?
Yeah, I'd have say that.
My favorite kill was definitely the parking lot kill, because he did that in a parking lot, and like in front of everyone who lived.
Oh, yeah, he didn't give a shit.
He didn't give a shit, and he was chasing her through the subway, or not the subway, but like, well, somewhere where there was like, trains.
Oh, no, he was. He chased her through the subway.
Okay, yeah. Chased her, like, through the subway.
Yeah,
and then
the New York or LA train station or New York train station, whatever. It was like a subway-ish area.
It was like a subway-ish area. So, yeah, and that was my favorite kill. Did you have I didn't really have a favorite character or least favorite. I guess I would say Anna was probably my favorite.
Because other than Frank, there wasn't other many characters on screen for very long.
Yeah, because they all got killed.
Yeah, so... And they were all just there just to showcase how sick he is.
Yeah, he is sick.
My favorite characters were the mannequins.
I love all those fucking mannequins he had inside of his house.
No, but I mean, yeah, there wasn't very many characters you could really attach yourself to in the movie.
Yeah, because they were all, yeah, besides Anna and Frank, I mean, it was all pretty much, hey, you're on screen, and then I scalped you, and then he would get mad. He's like, why'd you make me do that?
Yeah.
Look what you made me do.
Telling him, wait for that edit.
So, yeah, I mean, I didn't really have a least favorite character. I would probably say the mom, though, because she's kind of a hoe. And she was just a terrible mother, doing cocaine and having sex with multiple men in front of her child, like with him watching. I'm like, you know, this is probably this is why he is the way he is. Thanks, mom, for traumatizing your son. Terrible. My favorite line was the first line that he spoke. Well, not okay. It was like one of the first lines he spoke. He's like, please don't scream. You're so pretty.
Yeah.
And then jam.
And then dead. Like, but also, like, what does you being pretty and screaming have to do with anything?
Yeah. So that's
there's a lot of, like, thinker moments in this movie. They're like, what was, like, why even say that?
What?
Or
you
like,
fucking weirdo.
Yeah, there's a lot of weirdo moments in here that are red flags for both characters, I feel like.
Yeah, a little bit. And you're just like, this is a weird...
But obviously only one of them was like the reddest flag.
What was the reddest flag?
Frank being a serial killer.
Oh, yeah, that was a pretty big... that was a pretty big red flag there, Mr. Frank. So, IMDb summary. As he helps a young artist with her upcoming exhibition, the owner of a mannequin shop's... Sorry, the owner of a mannequin shop's deadly suppressed desires come to the surface. Oh boy, he's got some screws. Like, so I'm wondering, do you think it stemmed from his childhood, from watching his mom just do a bunch of random guys? Like, do you think that had anything to do with why he is I don't know, because like they don't explain why he is this way and why he is scalping women and putting those scalps on mannequins.
I mean, I mean. So he's clearly got mommy issues. So the answer to your question, yes. I mean, trauma can stem obviously from anything. We both know that. But he's got the Norman Bates syndrome.
Oh,
Norman Bates had mommy issues. He just didn't go to the extreme lengths that Frank did. But if you think about it, they both are parallel to each other. So watching this, I always watch through. Like, you know, a Norman Bates type of character. They both had mommy issues for different reasons. Okay. And we really never got 100% answers on either of them.
That's true, yeah.
So we don't really know why one dressed as mom and one dressed mannequins up as mom in a way.
Yeah, because the whole thing to this movie is, like I said, he obviously has screws loose. He works as this mannequin kind of rehabilitator or something like that.
Yeah,
where
and he's kind of like a loner, like Norman Bates was.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know necessarily how to fit in society, but he tries to with his awkwardness. And there's always going to be that one person it's always happens to be a woman, like, well, in the movie wise, that tends to, I wouldn't say attracted to the awkwardness, like in a romantic sense, but attracted to like, you know, hey, I like you, you're quirky, you're different, let's be friends, or let's hang out. And Norman Bates also had that same relationship with people outside of his mom.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if you ever saw the TV show Bates Motel, but like,
oh yeah, that okay. was a fucking phenomenal
show.
And
I'm not, even though the show's been on for a while, years ago, it's over now, but I'm not going to really spoil anything, but what they established, what they kind of gave us in that show too, was when he was younger, you know, his weirdness kind of did attract some females, but he didn't really know how to act like with them in a way, and some of the things that he did weren't quite normal. Not saying like, not like going like sexually or anything. You just, some of the things when you're watching that, you're just like, that's not how like you're supposed to do that. Like society wise, like doesn't
he's
say that.
He's socially awkward.
Which, yeah. And so is Frank in here, but Frank takes it to 100.
to 100.
Like Norman Bates takes it to 11. Frank takes it to 100.
To a full 100, yeah. Because, you know, basically the whole entire movie is him stalking women, scalping them, placing them on mannequins in his house. And those mannequins at some points in the movie are real people. So that's how you know Frank is fucking batshit crazy, because he's seeing these mannequins as the people that they were in real life, like Lucy, the redhead. Eventually, when he puts the scalp on that mannequin, he sees her and he's like talking to her and he tells her how he has a girlfriend, but then he pulls the covers off his girlfriend and he sees a mannequin and he's like, wait, that's not right. So, you know, something is going on with him and he's just mentally unstable. And
if I at a young age saw my mom
doing all
get railed
shit
by multiple people in like pornographic ways, I probably would have a different type of mental illness than I do now.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'd be affected differently with my mental illness.
Like, I'm not justifying him being a serial killer.
No, in any way, shape, or form.
But like, it probably would drive me the same way. I would probably be that person as well.
Yeah, because I mean, that's you know, she was a single mother. There was no mention of, you know, Frank's dad. So you know that he was a kid who was alone a lot. His mom obviously didn't pay a lot of attention to him. She was just too busy doing drugs and having sex. So yeah, that I think that would fuck anybody up in a very, very traumatic way, especially at that young of an age. Because I think, I don't know, he's probably like, what, 8, maybe 10 in those flashbacks?
Yeah, and who knows how many, I mean, we only saw a few flashbacks, but who knows how many times it actually happened or...
Exactly, we only saw like 3 or 4 times. I'm assuming that was probably a nightly or at least a weekly thing that happened.
Yeah.
So that would fuck anybody up. But yeah, he meets this girl on the internet and her name's Lucy. And, I'd say she probably, except for like Anna, she has like the most screen time, cause they go out, they have the dinner,
yeah,
they have wine.
She's got a good 6-7 minutes of screen time.
Yeah. And then she, you know, she invites him back to her place and they almost do it, but he's, you know, again, socially awkward. So he doesn't know how to do it or I don't know. He's just very weird. But I love the shot when and I don't know fucking how they filmed this movie, because I mean, obviously, I know that he was standing behind the camera and kind of doing things, but that scene when they, like, he falls on the bed, like, what are they, just CGing the camera out? Because, like, holy shit.
That's a lot of times when you see...
Because it looks like it's literally right at his eye line, and he's looking at he falls back, and the camera falls back, and you just see him in the mirror above the bed, and I'm like, how the fuck did they do this?
I mean, you know, rotoscope, you know, movie magic, obviously, but a lot of times when you see any type of reflection in a movie, unless it's something, you know, you've missed in the reflection, which shit happens all the time, it is, a lot of times a movie will just use, if they use any type of CG, it's to CGI like rig like wires out,
right,
cameras out.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when you see those mirror shots like that, they are CGIing that out. But obviously you could do stuff with movie magic.
Because there's one scene where he's looking in the mirror, but you can tell that the camera's just off to the side. But that one where he falls back on the bed and looks up in the mirror at the ceiling, I was like, damn, this is like such a good way to shoot this movie, because eventually, you know, he kills Lucy by scalping her, shocker. And the camera kind of comes around him as he's doing that. And I would love to see, is there a fucking behind the scenes on this shit? I wonder if there is.
I don't know.
The Making Of. Okay, then so I'm going to be watching that. I'm going to be watching that at some point. And then there's a commentary with Elijah Wood and the director. So
yeah, I know that Elijah Wood was only not on set for 2 actual days. And most of the time he was just following the cameraman around the whole time. And all of his dialogue was just voiceover, ADR after the fact. So like a lot of the times when he was killing anybody or you hear the dialogue, that wasn't happening in the movie. It was all basically like they made like a silent, like a one-sided conversation movie. And he just went back and did all the audio on the audio track, which is why it sounds so clean and crisp when you watch the movie.
Yeah, obviously when he's on screen and he's talking, then he's talking. Yeah, but anytime he's behind the camera, then ADR.
Yeah, he's actually not talking until after it was filmed.
Yeah, there's actually a really cool moment I wanted to get your opinion on, because when they're out at, when him and Lucy are out at dinner, there's that moment when he gets like the, like that, some sort of like cluster headache, because he like, I guess that's when he just gets the need to kill, because he looked at Lucy and her head started bleeding. But when he looked around at the restaurant and everyone was looking at him, do you think everyone was looking at him, or was that just like a hallucination?
That was just him hallucinating.
Okay, that's what I figured, because it's such a creepy moment, because he turns around and every single person in the restaurant's looking at him. Dead silent, not moving, not saying anything. I'm like, I'm so unsettled right now.
Because, I mean, he was hallucinating her, like, dead at that moment, too.
That's so, true,
It was all an illusion. I mean, I'm sure some people would probably look at him because, you know, when in any restaurant or whatever, if you're making a scene, people are like, what the fuck is that
What's
guy
going
up to?
On?
But the way they did it like that, that definitely was a hallucination. No one just dead looks at you and be like,
hello.
Like, no one does that.
Hello.
Not real life.
No, that's not real life. I love the song that she fucking puts on to when they get back to the house. Goodbye Horses, that Buffalo Bill dance to.
There was a missed opportunity. Goodbye Horses. There was a missed opportunity to use a different song, but I'm not going to say it because it's part of one of my Letterboxd reviews that I have.
Oh, okay.
But there was a missed opportunity that I also 100% agree with.
All right. We'll save that for the review.
Hilarious.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, like we said before, you do see, you know, Frank's mom was kind of a hoe, having sex with multiple.
She was a hoe faux show.
And yeah, so him and Anna's relationship is interesting. And another thing I'm going to ask you is, why do you think that he didn't kill her? Do you think it's maybe because she reminded him of his mom or something? Like,
same with the Norman Bates. In the show, he befriended a female that accepted him, said he was
weird.
Oh,
yeah, the girl with the oxygen, yeah.
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 And that never was a thing. Like, they never became more than what they were. And I feel like that was Frank's Anna. I feel like that was Anna in a way like that.
Because, that makes sense.
But also, she kind of accepted him in a way like... this is where I was like, where I'm watching this, I'm like, who the fuck just does certain things like this? And so it's 2012. We're allowed spoilers, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
of course.
I mean, I'm not going to go super detailed, but I wanted to make sure before I said shit. So when he first meets Anna, she's taking the pictures of his mannequins. First of all, who the fuck just does that?
Yeah.
And
from outside looking in.
Yeah.
like a weirdo.
I'm like, what a fucking weirdo. And so from right there and on, I'm like, if I was like a weirdo, I'd be like, yeah, what are you doing? But also like, hi. And then when they encounter, she's like, oh, I'm just looking at your mannequins. I do art. Like, I have an art piece for these. And so, you know, it's kind of weird that somebody owns a mannequin shop. Like, I feel like that's kind of weird. But I know it's a thing that has to happen. Like, I mean, because where else are you getting these fucking mannequins
Where else are you buying these things
from? I mean, to be honest, I've never actually seen a mannequin shop. I assume that it's not like I can go on Amazon and be like, mannequin shop. Or I'm just walking down the street and see mannequins for sale. But from the get-go, because of her artistic vision, he felt that she accepted him for who he was in that way. And then when he saw that she wanted to use him for the gallery and she put her face on all of those, like he could kind of resonate with that, because what he did is after he killed people, he put their fucking heads on, like he put the scalps on there and made them into people too. So in a way, he saw himself and her,
okay,
in an artistic way, and
they kind of connected in a weird way.
So he accepted the fact that she accepted him, and obviously to him that's a new thing. So also in Bates Motel, when the oxygen girl accepted him, in a sense, like, for his weirdness, obviously she didn't know everything that was going on.
Yeah, she didn't.
And neither did Anna until, like, the last minute. But, like, when you find some, no matter how weird you are, and this is real life, no matter how weird you are, how socially awkward you feel like you are, if you find that one motherfucker, female,
male, whatever,
that accepts you for who you are, hold on to that motherfucker for dear, because... Yeah. That's all you need is that one fucking person.
Yeah, no,
that's
for sure.
That's all you need.
Yeah, and he finds this person that kind of...
And even though it got weird a little bit for
them. A little
them,
bit, yeah, a little bit.
I mean, sometimes it's going to happen, especially when you're in that level of... That state of mind where...
yeah, he's in a fucking crazy state of mind because at the end, you know, he tries to... He's, like, giving her a massage and she kind of, like, gets combative with him and then they go into this whole thing where... She thinks, like, he's going to do something, and he's like, I just wanted to, like, you know, I came to you in your time of need, like, what the fuck? And he gets mad at her, and then they have this whole chase scene, and I love when she gets into that car, and she drives into fucking Frank, and then the car crashes, and she flies out the window. I was like, oh, fuck, that was, because, like, she hits the dumpster, and just, like, I'm like, oh, shit, that got fucked up. So... Yeah, it's just, it's a very brutal, very bleak, very just kind of gritty movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's so well done, and I truly appreciate the style of the cinematography. What's his name? Goddamn, Elijah Wood's performance is just so good. And this is truly one of the remakes that was done in, like, you know, in the late 2010s, or the early 2010s, that is, like, in my opinion, better than the original. This is like such a, and it's not just us who think that. It's got a great rating on Letterboxd.
And a lot of the reviews are better than the original.
A lot of the reviews are, yeah, like they say, oh, this is how you do a remake. And I agree because they brought something completely different to the table while keeping it very close to the source material. And there's a lot of, you know, little homages paid to the original movie. I mean, I really did wish we got to see a shotgun, you know, a scene. That would have been great. But I feel like what they did with this just kind of made it, you know, just kind of modernized it a little more.
So with, yeah, but also with the POV, like, you know, you got to make things a little bit more personal to give more of the effect. And I think the brutality of the knife, it's killing somebody with a knife.
That
is always
knife was huge, too.
Well, I mean, yeah, you got to go through a skull. You're not going to use a fucking, like, little butterfly knife. That's not going to do the trick.
Sometimes he used one of those like Sweeney Todd blades too.
The straight razor.
Straight razor. There we go.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, those work too.
Yeah. Those are sharp as shit.
But I feel like, you know, if we're doing guns versus knives, I don't think guns are very personal.
No.
But if you, because I can, you know, with guns you can shoot people from miles away or whatever. That's not very personal. You just,
yeah.
But with a knife, you have to get literally in their fucking face.
Yeah.
So when they brought the POV format in, I think keeping it with a knife or like keeping it personal, I feel like was the best way to do it. Now, don't get me wrong. If there's a shotgun shot to pay homage to it, I wouldn't be angry with you.
But no, it really wouldn't have worked.
But if
instance.
All we saw was the shotgun, POV style wise, I honestly probably would have been like, that was cool to see, but I would have not done that.
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense the way they did it because
it
of how.
Kept, yeah, with the knife, it just kept everything up close and personal.
Up close and personal, yeah. Because like I said, if this was filmed in any other way, I mean, I think it would still be a good movie, but I don't think it would have been as effective as it was if it was filmed.
Yeah, no.
If it was filmed normally, it wouldn't have been nearly as
the
effective.
The POV style definitely made it more eerie and
unsettling. Just like,
yes.
Oh my god. I think that's all I have to say on this. No. I wanted to talk about the ending real quick before we wrap up. So the ending is quite just, it's insane because all the women in his, you know, apartment, he sees them come to life, right? And then they start literally attacking him and ripping him limb from limb. But then the end shot is the cops finding him. I couldn't tell. Did he take his own life or something? Is that what he did?
Yes. So
did he like cut his throat or something? I couldn't tell.
So he killed himself.
The pressure of being so crazy just overwhelmed him and he just couldn't take it anymore.
Well, it was more of a, I also, in a way, this kind of reminded me of, Under the Skin. That's the Scarlett Johansson alien movie, right?
Yes.
So, and what I mean by that is the third act of that movie, she just wants to know what it's like to be human by she tries to eat like human food and she can't do it.
Right.
And throughout this whole movie, Frank, like in a way, is trying to be socially normal, but it's not working for him.
Right.
And at the end of Under the Skin, it didn't work for her either.
Right.
So I mean, obviously there was a difference in that. I'm not going to say the ending of Under the Skin, but like that was like basically the entire third act of Under the Skin.
Yeah.
But in this one, the pressure of wanting to be normal, but he couldn't be. Basically, like you said, the pressure of that, all of his abnormalities came crushing in. But you know, like how the end of The Relic was more, and we've obviously talked about it when we reviewed The Relic, but it was more of a metaphorical of...
Yeah, of the
this was
disease,
kind of
yeah.
like a metaphor of his pressure collapsing in.
Yeah, because they rip off all his skin on his face, and it turns out that he's a mannequin. He's been a mannequin this whole time, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was all a metaphor.
Yeah, okay, cool. So anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up here? No? Alrighty, let's do some post-review shit. I've got one tagline for you, and it is, I warned you not to go out last night. That was the only one they had. Trivia, I've got to pull it up on my phone here, so bear with me 2 seconds. Okay. Upon meeting Frank at the restaurant, Lucy says she's happy that he's not fat with long black hair and greasy skin full of acne, which, you know, that's what...
That was the original. That's
the description of Joe Spinell's Frank in the original movie. I already said the thing about Goodbye Horses. So the original setting in The Maniac 1980 was New York. However, in this film, it takes place in Los Angeles.
That's right. Yes, this one was Los Angeles. The first was New York. That's where I got confused.
Two big cities. Frank's childhood photos were actual childhood photos of Elijah Wood. I mean, that's pretty standard in
standard
most
movies. Yeah.
We already talked about the ADR recording in post. This film was shot in just 4 weeks, which is fucking impressive for the style that how they shot
I mean, it also makes sense because if you think for POV, it's literally just the cameraman walking around.
Yeah, but I'm saying like just because how they had to do. I'm like, wow, that's impressive. Since its release, some horror fans regard the film as one of the best well-made remakes ever.
I'd agree to that.
Yeah, I'd actually agree to that. Let's see here. Fans of the original film complained about the casting of Elijah Wood as Frank Zito for this film. It was said that he was deemed too attractive and unbelievable as someone who's a serial killer. I don't find him like attractive, but I don't find him ugly. He's kind of just a weird looking dude.
I mean, you got Evan Peters to play Jeffrey Dahmer.
That's exactly. Yeah.
But
Dahmer was that wasn't Dahmer. That was Ted Bundy who was good looking. Never mind.
Yeah.
This film was released about 32 years after the original film because it was in 1980. And I forgot two horror movies that Elijah Wood was in. This is Elijah Wood's third horror film, you know, as of 2012. The other three were The Faculty.
Oh, yeah.
Duh.
And he's like, he was baby Elijah.
Cooties and The Good Son.
Well, you mentioned Cooties earlier.
Yeah, I forgot about Faculty and The Good Son.
Oh, my God. I forgot The Good Son. I forgot he was...
Movie's so fucked up. I need to rewatch that.
It's so good. Him and Macaulay Culkin.
Him and Culkin. Rated 6.1 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.2 out of 5 on Letterboxd, 54% on the tomato meter, and a 44% audience score. I give this a 4.5 out of 5. I think it's a fucking masterpiece.
Me too.
Okay, so that is a Frightmare certified slap. Similar movies according to Letterboxd. We've got The Original Maniac, High Tension, Terrifier, Midnight Meat Train, and Terrifier 2. Similar movies according to IMDb. We've got Maniac, High Tension, Frontiers, The Loved Ones, and Inside. How many funny reviews do you have? I have 4.
Oh, I have 4 too.
Oh, shit. I'll let you go first.
Okay, so this one is 3 stars. Very kind of Elijah Wood to vlog the daily life of for us.
I have one from Lucy on Letterboxd. 3.5 stars that literally just says, fuck.
Oh, I saw that one too. I'm like, I didn't put that one. I didn't do that one though. But here's 4.5 stars. Finally, a love story I can relate to.
2 stars from Ely from Letterboxd, and it's asterisk. It says, insert joke about this movie snatching my wig here. Like, yeah, I guess she wears a wig. What do you got?
And then this one has to do with the song. So 3.5 stars. Should have used that Flashdance song, and that Flashdance song is called Maniac.
She's a maniac.
Yeah, how fucking hilarious would that have been if you put that in a movie called Maniac? Yeah, that would have been good.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I guess I only have 3. Okay, whatever. 3 stars from Russman. I get the same way about Mrs. Potato Heads.
I was going to use that one, too. But I was like, you know what? No, that was a good one, though. So I wanted to, knowing it was Elijah Woods, I wanted to look for a good one that was referenced to Lord of the Rings, because there's so many.
Okay.
So I finally found one that I really enjoyed.
All right.
So 3.5 stars. if you thought possessing the ring fucked Gollum in the head, you're not going to believe what it did to Frodo. I was like, yup.
Damn.
There's a lot. There's a couple of good Frodo ones, but that was my favorite one.
That's awesome. You got one more?
No, that was it. That was four.
Okay. Alrighty. So follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher App at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is stayspooky@outlook.com. Totally forgot to mention at the beginning of this episode, so here it is now. Last episode, I had totally omitted that we were doing this, and I was like, stay tuned for our bonus episode next week, and then I looked at the schedule, and I was like, what the fuck? How did I just gloss over Maniac? So that episode's not going to make sense when I said that at the end, but yeah, this is, the next episode is our Halloween sequel, so I forgot that there was 6 episodes this month because of the bonus episode, so that was my bad, I totally space cadetted that shit, but... So tomorrow we will be releasing the Halloween sequel that we are doing. There's only 12 of those, like I said before, so good luck figuring out which one we're doing. So until tomorrow, stay tuned and...
Space Stooky.
I hate you so much.
It's okay.
I love it,
I hate
though.
Me too.
Oh, by the way, I'm Dr. Proctor on Letterboxd and you're Slafferman. Okay, bye!